Hello and welcome to another episode of Father and Joe. I am Joe Rocky here with Father Boniface Hicks. And Father, I want to start this episode off by saying you gave us some advice in the takeaway from the episode 2 weeks ago when we discussed how to pray better. And you gave the example of sit somewhere in seclusion, different from your regular life, sit down with a Bible, read it slowly, and then pray like a pirate. Go through that whole process, and not to recap that whole episode, that's 2 weeks ago. I invite everyone to go check it out. So the long story short is I've been doing that. And a couple of realizations happened to me in the process, and the one might just be a weird coincidence, but I'm going to share it because I feel like it happens. Anyone who's gone through a miselect has had this feeling before. They hear the song number read, and they just kind of go to ballpark where they think that song is at, and they're kind of cloches, and then you thumb a couple pages across. Oh, okay, here's the actual one. And something came to me, I'm not totally sure why, that just said, start with Mark 12. Don't know why, but it just kind of came to me. So I opened the book, the Bible up originally. I'm in the middle of Isaiah. All right, I need to flip a little bit further back. I'm in the middle of Acts, and then I flip again, and boom, the page that starts Mark 12. And that's kind of what I'm going to discuss about here is that in Mark 12, it's the Pharisees and the scribes trying to pin Jesus down to try to find something. This is where you get the parable or question, the answer of Caesar's coin, the answer of if there is seven brothers that die, what do you do with the wife? Who will she be with in heaven? And then what is the greatest commandment? And where I want to get into this is that there were so many things that reading it slowly that really jumped out to me that I think were important to me. So I'm going to share them. And the first of which being the way that the Pharisees described Jesus. Because when you're trying to do a verbal debate with someone to try to make them feel bad, or in this case, arrest them for saying blasphemy, you do it by acknowledging some truths already about them. And one of the things that the Pharisees acknowledged is you tell the truth to anyone, you don't care how people react to you, and you don't care what the status of the person is. And I took that as just a tremendous thing that we all should approach and adopt within our lives. Because I feel that there is so much social pressure that we all have that says, I have to say what will keep me from, in this modern era, from being canceled or from being a pariah or whatever the terminology may be. And there is a fear from stepping up and saying what you believe to be the truth. And this isn't from Jesus's own autobiography saying it. This is from what his opposition was saying, acknowledging that fact up front. And there's something I always take away is when the opposition acknowledges a truth, it has to be a super truth because they don't want to give you credit for anything. They're trying to get him arrested. So, you know, at the end of the day, knowing it from that perspective as an opposition in the term of a verbal debate in this case, I just find that as a fascinating bedrock in a Bible passage that, you know, they come through Sunday Mass regularly, that I probably have heard that particular passage from Mark 500 times, and this is the first time it sank in. So, Father, I wanted to start with there because I think it's an incredibly important thought and message for all of us as most of us sit behind keyboards or our phone and actually think, like, what are people going to think of me, and should I not say something that's important that I feel I need to get out? Because not everyone's going to like it or I might get judged or whatever. So I wanted to start with that because I found it to be something that really stuck with me going through the exercise.
Well, it's a great topic, Joe, and there's a lot of facets to it that I think are important. I'm always, I suppose, in danger of diving into nuances and then maybe missing the big point. So just to acknowledge, first of all, what you said, you know, being honest. So honesty is a virtue, the virtue of truthfulness, the virtue of honesty. And why is it hard to be honest? And you mentioned a couple of things, but you know, it can cause some shame, some fear, to be honest, or we can be, anticipate something going wrong, can feel threatened by that. You know, you can think of, somebody who is hiding, doing something good, you know, hiding a Jew in their home and the Nazis come to the door. Now there's a whole moral theology question around whether you're required to speak truth in that, but you could certainly say, well, maybe they have housed somebody and the Nazis want to know about that and they're afraid to say, or somebody else, a friend that they don't know as well, is asking about it and they're afraid to say. And so there's some legitimate things around that. I mean, when your life is on the line, it's hard to say the truth that someone else is going to kill you for. So we should acknowledge that this is something that's not easy. Now there's another situation that it can be hard to, we might discern that it's not prudent to say something because the person can't receive it and even could be hurt or confused by it. We're recording this a few weeks out from when it will actually be played, but around the time we're recording this, Pope Francis just put out a declaration about blessings and same-sex couples. And now that has been taken, apparently by people who haven't read the document, has been taken in various directions. On the one hand, saying, oh, this is just one step towards actually blessing same-sex unions, gay marriage. On the other hand, this is a definite sign that the Pope is a heretic. So you have those extreme versions. And you could say, well, was it imprudent for him even to say something? Now, I'm not going to make that judgment, but it's a question that can be raised, you know, or similarly, a pastor who is maybe saying something true, but to 1,000 people, many of whom may not be in a position to understand what's being said. So certainly in this same-sex blessing, whatever thing, there are a lot of people that just need to have their hand held, or they need to be walked through it, and they just can't hear it. Or at a maybe a simpler level, more immediate level, that how you deliver the message to somebody that they have terminal cancer. How do you move your way into that? It's not that I'm afraid to say you have terminal cancer, but I'm sensitive to how you're going to receive that. And so I want to say it in the right way. And maybe now is not the right time. Maybe there's a delayed time. I think of, I pondered this a bit with women who have conceived a baby, but especially in the first 3 months, and in some women in particular are more likely to miscarry. And I always thought, well, why don't you just tell people? And if you miscarry, you tell people that too. Well, it turns out to be a lot of burden. I mean, first of all, to tell people, to share the joy, and then you have to like untell people when you miscarry 10 weeks later or something like that. And you're doing that in the midst of terrible grief, you know, like now not only do you have the pain of having lost the baby, you got to tell all these other people. And every time you tell somebody, you have to like relive the pain of losing the baby. And so there's a prudence around not always saying everything and being a little bit careful about that. So how does that fit back into what you're putting forth, Joe, from this passage? Now, it's funny, in this passage, it's not clear that the Pharisees are actually trying to honor Jesus. It seems that they're trying to goad him into saying more.
Oh, they're definitely trying to set him up, yeah.
You know, and so kind of related to what I'm just saying, we shouldn't always say everything. And so he basically doesn't take the bait. He doesn't just spill the beans and say flat out, pay the tax, don't pay the tax. He, you know, gives a little, show me the coin. Now they've just exposed the fact that they have coins with Caesar on them, which is already idolatry. And then he says, well, what is it? Whose picture is on it? Well, give to Caesar what is Caesar's. And so he relativizes the question and he challenges them kind of in their own framework. And he says it in a very clever way. And that's the challenge for us is, you know, sometimes how do we present these things? But the basic thing that we want to aim for is interior freedom so that we have the freedom. I'm not compelled to say something false or to not say something or to limit the truth. I have the freedom to say it or not to say it. And in some situations, I may choose to say it freely out of a discernment, a prudence, that I say it in a particular way for a particular reason, because somebody can't receive it, because if I just were honest with the Nazis that I have Jews in my house, that just gets us all killed. And so there is a way that we are not obligated either to say everything all the time. So, but to have that interior freedom that I can actually speak honestly, and I can speak maybe a portion of the truth. I don't always have to say all of the truth. As I discern in certain circumstances, it may be more prudent to only share a few things now, maybe a few things later.
Yeah, and I think that that's a great element there. And Father, as you were saying there, I think that I might be guilty of what you said in the beginning yourself, of getting too much in the nuances, admitting the big picture sometimes. I think that there's great depth in the Gospels, and that when you get into the nuances, I think you understand the big picture more, but you can certainly get lost in all of it there. And to continue in with that theme of what's going on in that context, there's three, clearly it's a setup in terms of the Pharisees trying to get Jesus. They start with the question of the coin. Let's try to create a civil disrest so that then the Romans want to take you out, so I don't got to do anything. Oh, Jesus dodged that bullet. All right, number two, let's hit him with the big theology question. What are the most important things in terms of heaven? The law says do this. You're teaching something that seems contradictory. The law says you need to take on your brother's wife, and you're saying, trying to set him up in that answer, in the discussion of that. And gonna not to bypass that, but to get to the part that I thought was very interesting was the third different person comes up after the first two have failed and said, what's the greatest commandment then? And Jesus gives his answer of you love God and you essentially treat others as yourself. And the Pharisee or scribe, forget which one it was, restates his answer and goes, that makes sense. Everything that I've been taught, that makes sense. We should listen to this guy. And clearly he was in a pregame meeting before this to try to pin Jesus down and try to get him arrested. And here he is listening to the answer, actually being open to it and saying, it's right. This is right. And the part that stood out to me, because I think that it might be rare, maybe in the Bible, or maybe just rare in society and tipping off my own bias, is that Jesus explicitly says, you got this. You're doing this right. You understand what I'm trying to tell, and you're being willing to listen. And as I'm reading that, like, oh, that must not happen a lot. And then literally the next day he comes out and it's the poor woman giving all of her wealth and saying that she's doing it. She's like, oh, this might happen a lot in the Bible, and I've been oblivious to it my whole life. I think that that's something that is important, is that Jesus very explicitly tells us that we're how to do things right sometimes, but we can get caught in this prism of just feeling negativity and that I'm not living up to the request, the burden. And we just can wallow in the failures, when there's a lot of times that you might be doing something right, and Jesus might have explicitly said you're doing something right, but you're missing it. So I wanted to spend a couple minutes on that, as we have about 7 minutes or so left in the episode, because I think it's the other main part that I've taken away from the last 2 weeks of reading that I wanted to discuss here. The first was that Jesus tells the truth regardless of who's there, and the other part is he tells us we're doing things good more often than most of us think. We don't have to be dead next to him on the cross just to be the only time we're getting told we're doing good. Because to me, that was the only time I've ever like clicked with the other thief on the cross at the crucifixion. So anyway, I wanted to point that out, because I think it's an important message that we can do things right.
Beautifully said. I was struck when I was doing some work with the tool StrengthsFinder when I was being trained as a coach, and they pointed out that something like 85% of employees in the U.S. report that they've never received a positive word from their boss in the last year. Mm-hmm. And the person who is doing the coach training said, do you think that's actually true? And most of us said, well, no, probably not. Well, why does it feel true? Well, when we're told something negative, it can cause cortisol to be released. Cortisol is a stress hormone. We feel the stress of being criticized. And cortisol stays in your blood for about 26 hours. When you hear something positive, it causes oxytocin to be released. Oxytocin is a bonding hormone, and that stays in your blood for about 2 hours. So the relative proportion to the number of good things you need to hear compared to the number of bad things that tend to, it's not an exact thing, you know, that there's a 13-to-1 ratio or something, but they say typically you need to hear about 5 good things to counteract or to balance out one negative thing. And so it may be that we're hearing positive things, but we're hearing so many negative things, or even an equal number of negative things, such that it kind of cancels out or overshadows the positive things we're hearing. And so so what do we do about that? I mean, in terms of our human dynamics, we should say more positive things. That's the a simple point. But you make a great point, Joe, that in the scriptures, Jesus is praising people actually quite a bit. I mean, the faith of the centurion, the faith of the Syrophoenician woman, the faith of any of the people that he's healed. You know, your faith has saved you, and the examples you pointed out, the widow and her contribution, and he is affirming the positive. He is reinforcing the positive, and he's doing that in our own lives. You know, he's said positive things to us, and we just have to let ourselves hear them, meditate on them, take them to heart. So the more that we cultivate gratitude is a way of kind of savoring the good things that we have or the good things we've received. That really helps us to sort of take those positive words to heart. It's really, really useful to recognize the good things that people have said about Jesus, even if they're building up to a setup mm-hmm. in the scriptures, but are true and certainly good qualities for us to strive for in terms of that honesty, at least the freedom, the interior freedom to be fully honest. And then we may have to discern exactly how we present the truth. We want to do that in love, not just hammering people with it. The truth is always relational. Well, it needs to be. Communication is always relational, and so what we say needs to take into account the other person that we're talking to. But of course, the content of what we say needs to be in touch with reality, needs to be true. So, yeah, those are great things to reflect on. I love that you took to heart our podcast and the teaching about prayer, and you took time to meditate on the scriptures, and it helps you to tune into things you hadn't noticed. And I think that's it's so important to realize that we're always tempted to treat the Bible like information and, well, you know, check, I read that, did that, been there. You don't read the Bible. Actually, you don't really read any, you never get everything out of anything. I mean, there's nothing that we read, even an instruction manual or something, that we don't have more information to get out of it, but we need to have the questions or the kind of openness, the preparedness to hear something. And that may not be something you're really ready to hear until 5 years from now. So it's important to read the Bible 5 years from now, as well as now and all the times in between. And I love your witness to that. It's really a fruitful exercise for you.
Yeah, no, it absolutely has been. And, you know, as we're filming this here, Father, you can see this, that I'm realizing now as we're in the middle of progress, this, that I have a second chair in my office that I basically never use. And that was what I determined. Like, I'm going to sit in that chair. It's a spinny chair, so I can move around the room. Normally it's not in the frame, but nonetheless, it's exactly what you said. Put yourself in a different space, literally a different location in the room than normal, not sitting here in front of the computer. And there's just something about that process that has been liberating. I mean, there's just no way around it. And that, some of it was just, first of all, I that whole part where my mind said start with Mark 12, I don't even know why it said that. But then to get to the page, I just thought that as a weird thing. Like, because the other part of me was like, wherever it started, as long as I was in a gospel, was going to be where I was going to start. But with that being said, it's just amazing that how, when you were saying going through the, honestly, where are you at right now? Step one of the praying like a pirate, and then being able to, how would Jesus respond to this after having just read whichever particular passage I was on? It was just amazing about how much connections were there. Now, you could also make an argument that I was trying to make a connection based upon what I read, but it didn't feel like that. It felt like there was a reason for this at this time and whatever. And when you said that the things will change in ways that you can't really identify this, it's only been, I think, 2 weeks of doing this or so, give or take. And just it just feels that there's differences happening. Again, as you point out here with the cortisol, that not every feeling can be exactly 100% accurate, but you know, at least it's a direction that's going there. So I certainly invite, first off, if you haven't listened to that episode 2 weeks ago, please do that. I think it will greatly help you. And then, just like then, follow the instructions there of it. Engage in a deeper prayer life that makes a difference. And it really will help build and benefit things, not just within your own self, but also within the relationships of those around you. Because one thing that's true with all people is you're not the only one who has this feeling. And one thing that we are have the ability of is, once I've gone through something, I can see someone else that's going through it because I can see those identifiers. And then you end up being a multiplier effect in that person's life in a way that really would not have been expected. So something I definitely invite people to do here as you're listening moving forward. And if you haven't already, please like and subscribe. Every review you give on your platform has been absolutely massive. And regardless of what stars you think we deserve, please give us one, because it does absolutely help. And we thank you for helping us to grow in this fashion.